The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
It's a big headline this morning, isn't it? Moderna, the American biotechnology company, asking authorities here in Singapore to approve the use of its COVID-19 vaccines. And if all goes well, that first batch could be here in Singapore as early as this month. Moderna hasn't given details on the number of doses that Singapore can receive, citing confidentiality clauses, but it said it would be ready to ship its vaccines here right away once approval is given. So as we see a lot of the vaccine race heating up and a lot of the front runners, even as that's happening, keep in mind that IATA, the travel association, estimates that it would take 2 years to supply 14 billion doses to everyone, because you have to think about distribution as well. So are there plays for the distribution pipeline that an investor should be looking at? Will delivering a vaccine help the aviation sector? Then we'll turn to the topic of China. Some analysts believe that investors should be allocating more of their portfolio into Chinese stock. Is it a bright spot right now, China? We'll look at that, as well as companies to focus on other plays as the global economy recovers. We put all these questions to Tong Ho Sung. He's Director and Health of Wealth Management for the Aura Group. Good morning. How are you, Mr. Tong?
Fine, thank you. And thank you for having me.
Great to speak with you again. Let's start with great news about the vaccine, but also what that means for the aviation sector. So as I mentioned in the intro, IATA estimating, given the load of a Boeing 747 freighter to reach every man, woman, child on Earth, it's going to take 2 years to supply some of the 14 billion doses expected to be distributed. But airlines are going to be the workhorses of this distribution pipeline. So do you see good vaccine news being a boon to the airlines?
Well, I would say in general it is. Yeah, I mean, positive news on the vaccine front will definitely help the travel as well as the airline industry. That's for sure. Yeah. In fact, I mean, if you just look at what happened when the positive news first came out in mid-November, travel and travel-related stocks basically had a nice pop of approximately between 20% and 30%. Yeah, I mean, this positive news should help ease some travel movements as well as travel restrictions, and hopefully creates more travel bubbles between countries that have, I would say, demonstrated their ability to control the spread of the virus. Yeah, however, I mean, I would caution being too optimistic, as infection rates in Europe, in the US, and some Asian countries have actually increased. As we all know, from the most recent example, is the travel bubble between Singapore and Hong Kong,
right,
being postponed until next year, when it was planned to start on November, sometime in November 22nd, if I'm not mistaken. So, yes, it will definitely be a boon to the airline industry. And as you rightly put it, or at least indicated from the IATA report, it would probably take about 2 years. Yeah, even using a Boeing 747 freighter. Now, what has happened also is that, as you've also mentioned, that a lot of these airlines have become workhorses. They've also reconfigured some of their fleet from passenger train carrying planes into cargo carrying roles. Yeah, and I guess when governments decide to open up their borders for more passenger, then what would happen is they would need to reconfigure their seating plans again. Now, once that is being done, I think airlines will probably find it difficult to fulfill every seat because of ongoing social distancing.
Right.
So that they probably would have to leave the middle seat empty so that people would have the necessary distance in between. Yeah. Now, however, I would say that as far as airlines benefiting, I would imagine that that would probably benefit countries that are much larger, where you have more opportunities for domestic tourism. Yeah, just like, for example, during China's Golden Week holidays in October, they had approximately 70% of the usual domestic tourism. And that in itself, you're talking about hundreds of millions of people. And just recently, the traditional Thanksgiving holiday in the U.S., millions also traveled domestically to see family and friends, yeah, despite the increasing infection rates in the U.S. So I would say, yes, it will definitely benefit the airlines, but it would, I would say, be a little bit more selective and a little bit cautious.
Makes a lot of sense, especially because the future of airlines, as you say, is so uncertain with all this reconfiguring that needs to happen.
Yep. That's very true. And I think the runway for full recovery in the economy as well as air travel is still quite a distance away.
All right. So are you bullish at all on logistics plays, which are such a big part of the vaccine distribution pipeline?
Yes, I am. I mean, I'm bullish on the logistics play, not only because of storage for the vaccine. As you know, the vaccine, some of the vaccines, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Pfizer's and Moderna's vaccines, they require special refrigeration.
Yeah.
It has to be kept at a very low temperature for it to survive. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it becomes inert and useless. So for, I guess, logistics, yes, because of that. And but it means that very few logistics companies would benefit as they would have such capabilities.
Right.
Yeah, but in general, I like the logistics sector simply because of, I guess, continued increase in e-commerce.
Right.
As you can, as you know, there are data from the U.S. You know, during the traditional Black Friday shopping, sales in traditional stores basically plunged by over 50%. But online sales surged about 22%. So, yes, I like the logistics sector very much.
All right. So the broader theme of distribution you do like, but there's so much involved with the COVID distribution pipeline, right? There is, in terms of trying to decide where the money is made, is it airlines? Is it, first of all, the drug companies, the drug distribution companies that it has to go through. So, and then the infrastructure. And as you say, there's some vaccines that need freezer trucks. So there's a lot involved there to be thinking about plays, stock plays, right? For
yes.
vaccine distribution.
That's right. That's right. Distribution is going to be critical for the vaccine. And I guess for the less developed nations, it's going to be even tougher getting the vaccines to them.
Gosh, yeah. All right, let's turn our focus now to China. I was reading a report that cited investor Paul Colwell, who said investors need to be looking at allocating more of their portfolios, not just 5%, maybe 20% of their portfolios into China in terms of geopolitical diversification, because he believes it's just going to be a more crucial consideration in the years ahead. What do you think?
I believe that regardless of whether we're talking about pre-COVID or post-COVID recovery, I think most fund managers would already have some allocation into China. Yeah, perhaps post-COVID, the allocations into China probably would increase as the Chinese economy, as you know, continues to improve and is looking very likely to be the only major country to actually register positive full GDP growth of about 2%, and this despite the trade war with the U.S. and the domestic lockdown and movement restrictions imposed by the government at the beginning of the year. So, I mean, the Chinese industrial sector is also showing return to levels before the pandemic and lockdown, and this is as evidenced by data given by the manufacturing PMI numbers by the National Bureau of of statistics. I mean, it shows that it rose to about 52.1 in November compared to 51.4 in October. And this in itself actually reflects the highest number since October 2017. So even the Chinese service sector have expanded for 9 straight months as domestic consumption increased and consumer confidence improves. So, I mean, just this morning itself, a much broader measure of China's economic improvement. But when I say it's a broader measure, because you tend to look at the country's manufacturing activities of larger as well as state-owned companies, the official Caixin manufacturing PMI rose to 54.9 in November compared to 53.6 in October. And this in itself is actually the highest since November 2010. Any number above 50 always indicates an expansion of the economy.
That's great insight. What do you think of the thesis, though? Paul Colwell saying that the traditional allocation of 5% that you see maybe pension funds or endowments or global investors have in China should be up to 20%, because he says that would be proper positioning for a post-COVID world in the new world order. Now, that's controversial. What do you think?
Okay. For me, I believe that there is actually no right or magical number for allocation into any specific region or country, because I think it really all comes down to one's investment strategy, time frame, as well as appetite for risk. Now, fund managers who are managing portfolios that basically tracks a specific index, for example, the MSCI World Index, would most likely allocate their exposures to certain countries or regions accordingly, because they're basically tracking a specific index. However, for those who don't track any particular index and purely just looking for alpha, may not allocate their positions proportionately, but have more concentrated exposure and positions. So it's tough to say what the right numbers are. It really comes down to your investment strategy. But whatever it is, you know, China, there should be an allocation to China. And that's something that one, I would say, I have to decide how much of it going into China, depending on their own risk appetite, time frame, and strategy.
Absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. I guess what I found interesting was this idea of a new world order. And, you know, Colwell obviously believing that the world is moving away from globalization. And we heard so much about decoupling of the US and China. And it's clear that he thinks there is a very strong case for allocation into China. If we look at the China A-share market, what is that relatively correlated to? Is that lowly correlated with developed markets?
The suggestion of decoupling, I think, is still very much in the air, right? I mean, if you look at, yes, countries have tended to be a little bit more nationalistic today, but if you really look at it from a high level, it seems like the common enemy is China. You have the tensions between China and the U.S. On the trade side. That has spilled over to Europe and China, and that's on technology, you know, trying to prevent Huawei from providing 5G into the continent. And then you look at Australia, who has sided with the West, and is to some extent paying the price for that. So as far as decoupling is concerned, I think it is still very much in the air. I mean, yes, could it be just politics, or is this really purely economics? Because despite that, as you're aware, the recent RCEP agreement was actually signed by all ASEAN nations together with Australia,
correct,
New Zealand, Japan, South Korea, and India. Though India decided that they would defer joining into this group. So, despite ongoing trade tensions between like Australia, New Zealand, and China, they're actually a part of this group, which basically is a grouping of countries coming together, agreeing on reducing tariffs, as well as, you know, having standardized dispute resolution processes, as well as state of origin, processes. So one could say that, yes, there is that nationalistic fervor, but at the same time, I think governments understand that, you know, at the end of the day, economics would still probably come to the fore.
He's Tong Ho Sung, director and head of wealth management for Aura Group. We wish him good health always. Tong Ho, just yesterday I was talking to an investor who told me that this year he put $1 million into the stock market and it's working out very well for him, you know, his picks. Mm-hmm. So right now everybody wants to know, where is the money to be made, especially as we see economies coming back to life. So people want to know, what are long-term recovery plays? Where are the possibilities as you see it?
Yep. Okay. That's a good question. Now, since the positive vaccine news, I think a lot of investors have become a lot more bullish on the markets, as evidenced by people jumping into what they call laggards, or the value, or at least the value sector companies. And that's where you see the travel-related sectors like hospitality, financials, again, as I said, logistics, and then, of course, renewables. Because a lot of these developed nations have come out to say that they intend, or their plan is to be carbon emission neutral by mid-century, and then healthcare. And I guess as we've spoken about logistics and warehousing, as well as the travel-related e-commerce as well. But however, I mean, if you look at healthcare, it continues to be favored. And just as a little bit of an aside, JD Health International, it raised about 27 billion Hong Kong dollars for its IPO. And this is pricing it at the top end of its range. This IPO alone surpasses the previous $2.3 billion share sale by a Japanese healthcare company, and that happened about a decade ago. So if you look at healthcare, I would say that this is going to be a continued sector to look at. So if I had to position my funds as to where it will be, I would say go into the value sectors, the laggards, where you were looking at travel-related, logistics, warehousing, e-commerce. I still like e-commerce, healthcare, as well as the renewable space.
That's interesting. So just to draw a distinction out, you mentioned JD Health, and that's a play not just on healthcare, but on healthcare that's online, right? That's China's online healthcare platform.
That's right.
Industry.
JD Health is actually the largest online healthcare platform in China, as well as online pharmacies by revenue, according to their prospectus. I think the company recorded revenues of about 8.8 billion yen in the first half of this year alone, up from about 5 billion yen in the same period about a year ago.
Very interesting. Are there any sectors that you're telling your clients to steer away from, or you're steering away from?
Actually, there isn't any. I mean, in today's market, I mean, everyone's chasing yield. Even the REIT market has come back somewhat. So I would say that, you know, most people, at the end of the day, if you look at the market in general, it's a rotational play, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Some have taken money off the table for technology because it had a nice little run-up. But I would say that at the end of the day, being invested in the market, it's not so much time in the market, but actually time in the market.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, that distinction between knowing, even in the airline sector, or if you say, you know, you're interested in the hotel sector, the hospitality sector, it's knowing which stocks are tradable versus which stocks are investable in the long run. Being able to make that distinction, you know?
I guess you can, yeah, but I would say that for an investor who's looking at making his money work harder, being invested in the market longer would be a lot more advantageous than trying to be a day trader. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, news flow comes so quickly that anything can change. I mean, even on the vaccine news, I mean, take, for example, AstraZeneca. They came out and said that, you know, they have a close to 95% efficacy in their vaccination. However, as people went to look deeper into their data, they said, that's not really true because the sample size is either too small or that, you know, and that people needed two dosages instead of just one. And what happened to that share? Basically dropped.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's tough when you're trying to be a day trader as opposed to being an investor. And I think that's a very big distinction between an investor, someone that's in the market for a long period of time. I think that's where one can actually ride out the nice peak upswings of the market versus someone who's trying to time the market.
Well, that's important insight. We always love it when real investors share how they think with us. Tong Ho, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you very much for having me again.
He's Tong Ho Seung, Director and Health of Wealth Management for the Aura Group. They provide investment solutions for investors across credit, private equity, venture capital, and real estate strategies.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.